Hi, I'm Jackie Roble with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. During the next 30 minutes, I will be sharing nutrition information from the Nutrition Action Health Letter. Nutrition Action Health Letter is the flagship publication of the Center for Science and the Public Interest. Published 10 times a year, Nutrition Action provides honest, unbiased, science-based advice on nutrition and health. It's the world's largest circulation nutrition newsletter, bringing the latest nutrition news and advice to more than 500,000 readers. Nutrition Action is totally free of advertising, so they're free to blow the whistle on products that aren't what they pretend to be and to applaud the good ones. Please use the information presented in this broadcast in consultation with your personal physician. The following articles are from the November edition of the Nutrition Action Health Letter. Half-Baked News Bites by Bonnie Liebman. Another day, another news flash. Never mind that the details may come straight from a press release designed to grab eyeballs. Are the results preliminary, unpublished, inconsistent with better research, industry-funded? Odds are you'd never know it. While being in a relationship has many advantages, it turns out there's an unhealthy downside as well, reported FoxNews.com in March. According to a new study which analyzed over a decade's worth of data for more than 15,000 adults, couples are more likely to gain weight than those who are single, said Fox, citing an article in the British tabloid The Sun. Newsweek went further. People in relationships gain weight because they don't care about their looks, it declared. Whoa, did anyone bother to read the study? It looked at 10 phone surveys done in Australia between 2005 and 2014. Each was a snapshot in time, so it said nothing about whether people gained weight over time or why. Instead, the study simply found that fewer couples than singles were normal weight. Could that be because singles underestimated their weight? Did heavier people gain weight before or after becoming a couple? The study couldn't say. When couples don't need to look attractive and slim to attract a partner, they may feel more comfortable in eating more or eating more foods high in fat and sugar, said the study's lead author, according to FoxNews.com. How did that possible explanation, one of several the author suggested, turn into a cause for weight gain? Ask Fox and Newsweek. Bottom line, this study offers no good evidence that getting into a relationship leads to weight gain. Eating pasta can help you lose weight, new study reports. A new study published in the journal BMJ Open might change dieters' views of pasta, reported Women's Health in April. Researchers found that people actually lost weight while eating pasta, said the magazine's website. The researchers analyzed 32 randomized control trials of about 2,500 people who ate a low glycemic index diet, consuming pasta instead of other forms of carbohydrates. Low GI carbs don't cause a rapid rise in blood sugar. The results? The participants ate about 3.3 servings of about a half cup pasta on average each week. Over 12 weeks, they lost a little more than a pound on average. Where to begin? First, 21 of the 32 studies had no idea how much pasta people ate, and the remaining 11 studies only reported how often people ate pasta, not how much. Food labels use a one-cup serving of pasta, but many restaurants serve 3 to 4 cups in an entree. So where did the half-cup serving come from? The press release that accompanied the study. Women's Health eventually got around to explaining the biggest flaw. The researchers point out in their conclusion that eating pasta as part of a low GI diet is likely what helped these people lose weight, not the pasta alone. Do low GI diets help people shed pounds? That's debatable. But why did the researchers even bother assessing the effect of pasta in the context of low glycemic index dietary patterns? Kudos to BuzzFeed News for digging into that question. Three of the scientists behind the study in question had financial conflicts as tangled as a bowl of spaghetti, including ties to the world's largest pasta company, the Barilla Group. Bottom line, pasta is no magic weight loss bullet. Eat more seafood if you want to have more sex, study says. Couples who eat at least 2 portions of seafood a week have more sex and get pregnant faster, a study found, announced the New York Post in May in an article reprinted from the British tabloid The Sun. Newsweek, the New York Times, Prevention, Reuters, and others also ran the irresistible story, but none had so few caveats. The Post leapt straight to an explanation. Researchers say the protein-rich food boosts men and women's sex drive and improves the quality of their sperm and eggs. Couples were 39% more likely to have sex on days when they both had eaten seafood, such as fish or oysters. But when only the man or woman ate seafood, they were no more likely to have sex than when neither did. If seafood were such a strong aphrodisiac, wouldn't you expect some uptick in odds if only one person had, say, a tuna sandwich? Of the 501 couples all trying to conceive, 92% of the frequent seafood eaters had gotten pregnant within 1 year, noted the Post. But only 79% of the other group had conceived. Frequent meant at least 8 servings per month. Yes, but could something other than the seafood have been responsible? Individuals with higher seafood intake could have healthier diets overall, which we were unable to account for in the present study, wrote the researchers. Couples who consume greater amounts of seafood together may share more meals and thus more time together, including nights, which might explain the association between sexual activity and subsequently fecundity, they cautioned. Neither factor would fully explain the links, said these scientists, and they cited other evidence that seafood or its omega-3 fat boosts fertility, but at least they acknowledge uncertainties, not the Post. Bottom line, aim for 2 or 3 servings of seafood a week to protect your heart. Pick low-mercury fish like salmon or sardines, especially if you're pregnant or trying to be. Eat dark chocolate, study says. It relieves stress. Dark chocolate with high concentrations of cacao can have positive effects on stress levels, inflammation, mood, memory, and immunity, according to two new studies, reported USA Today in April. Wow, what doesn't dark chocolate do? Real Simple Magazine went further. People who eat more chocolate are less stressed, according to science, it declared. The participants in the two studies, led by Lee Burke of Loma Linda University, ate 48 grams of dark chocolate a day. A Hershey Special Dark Bar weighs 41 grams and has 200 calories. Blood tests revealed the chocolate-influenced gene activity increased anti-inflammatory agents and increased infection-fighting cells, Burke said, reported USA Today. Gamma waves recorded by an electroencephalogram, or EEG, suggested that the treat could positively impact brain functions such as cognitive function and creativity even 2 hours after eating it. So the study never measured stress, inflammation, mood, memory, or immunity, just brain waves and gene activity. USA Today did get around to noticing that the two studies included a total of 10 participants, and results have not yet been published in a peer-reviewed journal for scrutiny. Yep. One study had just 5 people and no control group, people who got no chocolate. The other had 4 people who got chocolate and 1 control group who got none. How did 2 unpublished pilot studies make headlines? Loma Linda's glowing news release had to help. Oh yeah, the test chocolate was made by Parliament Chocolate, which is co-owned by Lee Burke's son Ryan. Sheesh. Bottom line, a large clinical trial is testing a supplement with cocoa flavanols on a heart disease, stroke, and memory. Even if it helps, you'd have to eat some 600 calories worth of dark chocolate a day to get that much. The vindication of cheese, butter, and full-fat milk. A new study exonerates dairy fats as a cause of early death, even as low-fat products continue to be misperceived as healthier, The Atlantic reported in July. An analysis of 2,900 adults found that people with higher and lower levels of dairy fats in their blood had the same rate of death during a 22-year period. The implication is that it didn't matter if people drank whole or skim or 2% milk, ate butter versus margarine, etc. Since when is an implication enough to exonerate anything? For starters, this kind of study can't prove cause and effect. It looked for a link between dairy fats in blood and the risk of heart disease, stroke, or death, but it couldn't rule out the possibility that people with lower dairy fat levels were different from those with higher levels. For example, people with lower levels drank more alcohol, had bigger waists, and were more likely to have type 2 diabetes and be treated for high blood pressure. The authors accounted for those differences, but they couldn't account for differences they didn't know about. One example? Were people who were eating more dairy more likely to start taking statins to lower their cholesterol over the 22-year study? The authors didn't say. Another key question. Were people with lower dairy fat levels eating less dairy and more chips, pretzels, soda, cookies, cupcakes, or other sweets or white flour? The authors didn't say. The lead investigator believes that this evidence is not itself a reason to eat more or less dairy, noted The Atlantic, but she said it could encourage people to give priority to whole-fat dairy products over those that may be lower in fat but higher in sugar, which may be added to make up for a lack of taste or texture. Tip, low-fat dairy doesn't necessarily have more sugar than high-fat. There's plenty to choose from. Bottom line, replacing saturated fats like those in dairy and meat with unsaturated fats like those in nuts, fatty fish, and most oils lowers the risk of heart disease. And that's based on numerous studies, including randomized clinical trials. Motherhood may affect Alzheimer's risk, studies show. Women who had three or more children were less likely to develop dementia than women who had only one child, researchers found, reported NBC News in July. And women who had miscarriages were more likely to develop dementia as well. Holy cow! The findings were presented at the annual Alzheimer's Association conference in Chicago. The study hasn't been published, but that didn't stop NBC from speculating on what could explain the links. It could be hormones, Heather Snyder, senior director of medical and scientific operations at Alzheimer's Association, told the network. Or you can think about women with three children. They are multitasking a lot. That could build up what are called brain reserves, explained NBC. Does Snyder have data showing that a woman's number of children is a proxy for multitasking? Or it could have something to do with the immune system, which changes during pregnancy, or even the way a woman eats when she is pregnant, said NBC, which never pointed out that something else about women who have three or more children could explain their lower risk. And only later in the story did NBC report the difference in risk, 12% lower for women who had at least three children, and 9% higher for each miscarriage. Not huge. Want to know if women who had two children had a lower risk than those who had one? Answer, no. NBC didn't say. But the report didn't stop there. It might not be that having more children is better, however, said the network. Last week, a team in South Korea found that women who had five or more children had a higher risk of Alzheimer's. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Bottom line, it's too early to know if pregnancies or miscarriages affect a woman's risk of dementia. Eat dinner earlier, dodge cancer? Ran the ABC News headline in July. In a new study published in the International Journal of Cancer, researchers noted that late-night eating is associated with multiple different poor health outcomes, including cancer risk. Yikes. Men who report eating dinner at least 2 hours before going to sleep had a 26% decrease in prostate cancer compared to those who eat independently before bed, said ABC. Women with the same dining pattern had a 16% decrease in breast cancer. But how many Americans swallow that last bite and jump right into their jammies? And even if you do, ABC neglected to mention that the 16% lower risk of breast cancer wasn't statistically significant. So the risk wasn't necessarily lower. People who had dinner before 9 p.m. had a 25% decrease in prostate cancer and a 15% decrease in breast cancer compared to people who had dinner after 10 p.m., noted ABC. Those differences weren't statistically significant either. What's more, something else about the late dinners could explain their higher risk. That's especially true in this kind of study, which asked people with or without cancer how soon after dinner they went to bed years earlier. Maybe current fatigue or depression made cancer patients more likely to recall hitting the sack earlier. Bottom line, until we know more, don't worry that late night dinners cause cancer. Ironing Out the Wrinkles, the Do's and Don't Bothers of Anti-Aging Skincare by Caitlin Dow. Moisturizers. A lot of my older patients complain of dry, itchy skin, says University of Michigan dermatologist Erica Stevens. That's because skin loses its volume over time, so it gets thinner and drier. Moisturizers relieve dryness by helping the skin retain water. That decreases the risk of tearing the skin if you're scratching because it's dry, explains Stevens. Torn skin increases the risk of infection. But moisturizers don't smooth out wrinkles, she notes. They just get rid of dryness and flakiness, which can make the skin look nicer. Don't count on most ingredients that are added to moisturizers to banish wrinkles either. Hyaluronic acid. It's a naturally occurring molecule that holds onto moisture inside the skin and plumps up the skin, says the University of Southern California's Marcel Nimni. But it's a huge molecule, so it doesn't get through the skin. That means that creams and lotions with hyaluronic acid retain moisture on the skin surface, but they won't have any long-lasting effect on the texture or smoothness of the skin. Vitamin C. It's necessary for building the collagen that gives skin its structure. Just don't expect much from serums and moisturizers. Vitamin C is pretty unstable, says Stevens, except at a low pH. So if the moisturizer isn't acidic, the vitamin C is often inactive by the time it reaches your skin. Or it may be bound to be a stabilizing compound that doesn't permeate the skin. No studies have looked at taking vitamin C to reduce wrinkles, but it's unlikely to help. Other ingredients. There are so many cosmeceuticals added to moisturizers, and it's almost impossible to know whether they do what companies claim or how much is actually in a product, says Stevens. They're not like drugs. They don't undergo rigorous testing, and almost all the research is industry-driven. You'd be hard-pressed to find any hard science for most of them. Her bottom line? Use anything you like that feels good on your skin. There's no reason to pay $100 for a moisturizer when you can use something basic from CVS. Collagen. Our line of beauty-specific products support the skin's moisture, improving the elasticity, tone, and vibrance, promises Vital Proteins, which sells collagen powder. The rationale? Since fine lines, wrinkles, and skin thinness are mostly due to losing collagen, why not just eat collagen? It's like a story from the Dark Ages, said the University of Southern California's Marcel Nimni, who literally wrote the book on collagen. If you want to be smart, eat brain. If you want courage, eat heart. If you want to be beautiful, eat collagen. But it's not that simple. When we eat collagen, our gut breaks it down into amino acids, just like any other protein, explains Nimni. In other words, your body doesn't shovel intact collagen to your skin. Nor can you direct the amino acids from the collagen you eat to build more collagen in your skin. What's more, there's only one amino acid, hydroxyproline, that's found in collagen that's special, says Nimni. That is, it's found in only a few proteins, and it's essential for giving collagen its strength. But we've known for 60 years that your body cannot use hydroxyproline from the diet to build collagen. The body has to make hydroxyproline on its own, Nimni explains. The issue is not that the skin is deficient in collagen's building materials, says the University of Michigan's Gary Fisher. It's that the machinery to build collagen doesn't work as well as we get older. Nimni's bottom line? This idea of eating collagen to improve your skin's appearance is the ultimate fallacy. People are wasting their money. The main cause of wrinkled skin in the end isn't your age. It's exposure to the sun. When shade or clothing won't cut it, sunscreen is the next best thing. Some tips. Look for SPF 30 or higher. Use a broad-spectrum sunscreen. Apply often and do it year-round. Quick studies. A snapshot of the latest research on diet, exercise, and more. An aspirin a day? A low-dose daily aspirin doesn't lower the risk of dying or having a heart attack or stroke in healthy older people. In fact, it may raise the risk of bleeding or dying, especially of cancer. Researchers randomly assigned 19,114 healthy Australian and U.S. residents age 70 or older, 65 or older for U.S., blacks, and Hispanics who have a higher risk of heart disease, to take either a daily enteric-coated aspirin, or 100 milligrams, or a placebo. After nearly 5 years, the aspirin takers were 14% more likely to have died than the placebo takers, and 31% more likely to have died of cancer, though the risk was still low. 3.1% of the aspirin takers died of cancer versus 2.3% of the placebo takers. Surprisingly, the aspirin takers were more likely than the placebo takers to die of colorectal cancer, though those results were less certain. Aspirin takers had a lower risk in earlier studies. The aspirin takers were also 38% more likely to suffer a major hemorrhage, such as stomach or brain bleeding, serious enough to require transfusion, hospitalization, or surgery. And the aspirin takers were no less likely to be diagnosed with heart attack, stroke, dementia, or disability. What to do? Don't take a daily low-dose aspirin if you're 70 or older and healthy, unless your doctor says otherwise. A low-dose daily aspirin may lower the risk of a heart attack or stroke in 50 to 69-year-olds at high risk, according to the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force. Ask your doctor. Alcohol. Unsafe at any dose? How much alcohol is best for your health? A team of scientists examined studies on 28 million people to estimate the global burden of 23 diseases and injuries due to alcohol. The risk of heart disease was 14% lower for men and 18% lower for women who drank one small serving of alcohol a day compared to those who drank none. However, drinking even that amount a day was linked to a higher risk of many other health problems, including cancers of the breast, colon, and rectum, and throat. Other outcomes, like cancer of the larynx or mouth, traffic injuries, and violence, increased at two or more small servings a day. The estimated risks? In 1 year, one of the 23 outcomes would occur in 918 of 100,000 people aged 15 to 95 who had one drink a day, versus 914 of 100,000 people who drank no alcohol. Not a huge difference. But the risk climbed to 977 of 100,000 people in those who had two drinks a day. Those results are based on global data, so they include some outcomes, tuberculosis, for example, that don't affect most Americans. And the studies didn't assign people to drink or not, so they can't prove that alcohol caused the risk or benefits. Nevertheless, the results contradict the widespread belief, promoted by the alcohol industry, that alcohol is good for you. Alcohol is a colossal global health issue, and small reductions in health-related harms at low levels of alcohol intake are outweighed by the increased risk of other health-related harms, including cancer, concluded an editorial published with the study. What to do? Don't start drinking on a daily basis in order to protect your health. Vitamin D and mood. Can extra vitamin D improve your mood, as some studies suggest? New Zealand researchers randomly assigned 152 healthy women aged 18 to 40 to take either vitamin D or a placebo once a month. Each group reported their moods online. After 6 months, the vitamin takers had no different depression, anxiety, or mood scores than the placebo takers. What to do? Don't expect vitamin D to improve your mood. The Healthy Cook, One Fish, Two Fish by Kate Sherwood. These two fish dishes pop with flavor-packed sauces and come together in just 30 minutes. No halibut? Try cod. Zesty tomato halibut serves four. 2 tablespoons plus 1 tablespoon extra virgin olive oil. 4 6-ounce skinless halibut fillets. 2 cloves garlic sliced. 2 anchovies fillets, optional. 1 pint cherry tomatoes, diced. 1 lemon zested and cut in half. 2 tablespoons flat leaf parsley leaves. 1/4 teaspoon kosher salt. Freshly ground black pepper to taste. Heat 2 tablespoons of the oil in a large nonstick pan over medium-high heat until shimmering hot. Saute the fish, turning once, until lightly browned and cooked through, 2 to 3 minutes per side. Remove from the pan. Add the remaining 1 tablespoon of oil with the garlic, anchovies, and tomatoes. Cook, stirring often, for 1 minute. Stir in the lemon zest and parsley. Season with the salt and pepper. Spoon over the fish. Serve with the lemon. Orange ginger salmon serves four. 1 cup fresh orange juice. 1 tablespoon minced ginger. 2 tablespoons miso paste or reduced sodium soy sauce. 1 tablespoon Dijon mustard. 4 6-ounce center cut salmon fillets. 1 scallion minced. Place a foil-lined sheet pan in the oven 6 inches from the broiler. Turn on the broiler. In a small pan over high heat, boil the orange juice and ginger until reduced to a syrup, about 1/4 cup. Whisk in the miso and the mustard. Place the fish on a sheet pan and spoon the sauce over the fish. Return the pan to the oven. Boil until the sauce is bubbly and the fish flakes apart easily with a fork, 6 to 10 minutes. Let the fish rest for 5 minutes. Sprinkle with the scallions. Right Stuff. Best Dressed. Yes, the freshest, most flavorful salad dressings are the ones you whip up yourself, but sometimes that's just not in the cards. Enter Trader Joe's refrigerated dressings in the 3 mouth-popping flavors. Most refrigerated dressings are heat-pasteurized for safety, says Trader's website. Instead, these newbies use very cold water and very high pressure to achieve the same food safety results without cooking the ingredients. The result is a dressing with big, bold, bright flavors. And they ain't kidding. And you won't find any xanthan gum or yellow 5-dye or modified food starch. We're talking ingredients like avocado, olive oil, and basil in the Green Goddess, carrots, ginger puree, and miso in the carrot ginger miso, and almond butter, lemon juice, ginger puree, and turmeric in the almond butter turmeric. A 2-tablespoon serving of each dressing has no more than 60 calories, 1 gram of added sugar, and, thanks to those real ingredients, an impressive 110 milligrams of sodium. We love anything that gets people to eat more greens, but why stop there? Try the Green Goddess on black beans, avocado, tomato, and quinoa, or the carrot ginger miso with salmon, stir-fried broccoli, and scallions, or the almond butter turmeric with chicken, apple slices, toasted almonds, and mixed greens. Way to go, Joe. Food porn. Buncha Crunch. Denny's is on a mission to rebrand. A new artisan flair has arrived. Take the Dulce de Leche Crunch Pancake Breakfast, part of Denny's premium craft pancakes line. The new cinnamon crumb topping cooked into 2 buttermilk pancakes and topped with whipped cream comes with a pitcher of warm salted caramel for drizzling. What says premium craft more than drowning 2 white flour pancakes in crumb, read sugary, topping, caramel, and whipped cream? It's a 1,220-calorie dessert dressed up to look like breakfast. You know it's breakfast because Denny serves the pancakes with 2 eggs, hash browns, and 2 slices of bacon or sausage links. A breakfast of either pancakes or bacon, eggs, and hash browns? So outdated. All told, Denny sends you home with at least 1,740 calories and a day's worth of saturated fat, 21 grams, and sodium, 2,900 milligrams, along with roughly 24 teaspoons of added sugar. Feeding our guests in a literal sense will always be at our core, but feeding their souls is arguably one of the most important, Denny's chief marketing officer told Forbes in March. Watch out, soul, incoming. Quick tip. Shopping for fish? Frozen fish's quality is often as good as or better than fresh. Look for individually vacuum-packed portions that are frozen solid with no ice crystals. Dish of the month. Maple Brussels sprouts. Quarter 1-pound Brussels sprouts, sauté in a nonstick pan and 2 tablespoons olive oil until tender crisp, about 5 to 7 minutes. Season with 1 tablespoon maple syrup, 1 tablespoon red wine vinegar, and a quarter teaspoon salt. Top with a quarter cup chopped pecans. Serves 4. That's all the time we have for Nutrition News. Until next time, I'm Jackie Roble for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This program is readily available as a podcast after the initial broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening and happy holidays.